Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with George Dodd. How are you, George?
I'm sniffing away happily, thanks.
You're sniffing away happily. No colds, because you're a perfumer, we hear. Perfumers don't get cold.
And we drink lots of whiskey and wine, too. That helps.
That's the real truth. Excellent. We've been talking a wee bit about smelling wines and smelling things and all sorts of interesting things. And you said last week that, interestingly, that our noses can smell about 1,000 different receptors, and then that can combine to hundreds of millions or billions of different aromas, and that if you get a single aroma that fits together called an accord, you can create a unique smell, like a coffee bean roasting or something like that. And then as we finished off, you just mentioned that you think humans can actually smell really, really well.
Yeah, absolutely.
People always tell me, anyway, that dogs smell much better than humans. Whenever I've smelled a dog, they do not. So do you want to just correct me here on that?
Well, we have to, don't forget, dogs instinctively go around smelling things. Incidentally, do you have a dog?
I used to.
Okay, and presumably you took a dog for a walk.
Oh, I had a beagle, and she smelled everything, and she did smell.
Have you noticed that dogs instinctively smell surfaces? Because most smells actually are on surfaces. Did you ever get down on your hands and knees to sniff what your dog was sniffing? Most dog owners don't. It's very instructive.
No, because they often sniff bums as well. I didn't, George. No.
This, incidentally, the picture you just given us, finds, of course, another expression in the term a cocktail party. But incidentally, when you are at a party,
yep,
it's very instructive. There's a lovely series of social science that you can see, but every young man will know this. You go to a party, you grab a glass of wine in your hand, you look around, see there's a pretty girl somewhere, and you sidle over to her. And you often start quite far away from her, talking to her. Your eyes come into play first, you find an attractive female. Then the trick is to get her laughing, and so your ears come into play. And so she's laughing at your jokes, and instinctively you move nearer. And what's bewildering for lots of young men is the story stops there. Suddenly, you know, she finds you attractive, she's laughing at your jokes, but suddenly nothing happens. And you've actually come into smelling distance. And unconsciously, in any social interaction, without being aware, I'm a perfumer, I sniff everybody, but you are always sniffing people unconsciously. And particularly if they are feeling insecure or aggressive, their body odor will change. A sniffer dog picks that up very sensitively, but you pick it up unconsciously. And the kind of magic goes out of the situation, and instead of going home for the evening with a pretty girl on your arm, you take to the whiskey or whatever.
So do you find being a good smeller that you used to pick up girls quite easily? Or is it just the ponytail?
I actually had a hard time as in my teens and 20s, because basically it was hardly any foods I liked. I hated cheese. I still do. It's only recently, you know, I'll be 70 soon. I only recently could accept the mildest cheese. I hate offal smells, liver. I hate heavy, gamey smells. I hate fish. I absolutely abhor fish. I do a lot of consultancy work, and people sometimes want to treat me in a Michelin 3-star restaurant, which represent every goddamn smell to which I'm super sensitive and absolutely hate.
Why are you so sensitive to the smells?
It was genetically. But for example, if you take the smell of fresh shellfish, your lobsters and shrimps, there's one single chemical, aroma molecule there, a tiny little molecule, a very special one, which gives the charming aroma of that. Now, I have that in my laboratory, and I have a smell research group, so I'm able to actually do measurements of myself. And I'm something like 10,000 times more sensitive than the average person in the population.
Mm-hmm.
So that's too high a smell. The smell of which it occurs is too high for me. This is a very important about smell. You need to get a smell which suits you. Our individual sense of smell is unique. Our body odor is unique, and our individual sense of smell is unique. And this is why some people prefer one cheese to another, or one wine to another, or one whiskey to another. It's actually very charming, but it's a question of getting the smell at the right sensitivity. And because I'm very sensitive to that, on the other hand, I have great deficiencies. Can you smell freesias, for example?
Freesias?
The flowers. Freesia.
I don't know.
Well, you can stick my nose into the greatest bunch of freesias you could imagine, and I get zero sensation. I have to assume, people tell me they smell gorgeous, and I have to assume they're right. I just lack the gene for smelling freesias.
A lot of people, I have black spots in my nose. Not literally, like freckles.
Yes.
But, you know, I know I there's some smells I just can't get.
Yes.
You know, people go, do you smell this? And I go, no. And sometimes I think they're just making it up, to be honest. You know, you see someone doing their best Gilly Goulden impression of saying, oh, this wine smells of dandelions frolicking naked through the autumn mist. What the heck is she on?
Yes.
But I know there's different thresholds, and particularly with wine faults, things like TCA, trichloroanisole, some people are more sensitive to than others. And sometimes when you're talking about wine faults, it's not necessarily whether the wine's faulty or not. It's whether how sensitive you are to the fault.
Absolutely.
Another one would be perhaps there's
some of the off orders in wines, again.
Yeah, there's some. Sometimes I smell a wine, I go, how can anybody drink this? It's awful.
Yeah.
And it's got a real dirty, nasty smell to it. And people go, no, it's fine. And I'm like, are they just trying to sell it and they know it's bad, or do they just not know that it smells like that?
Let me tell you something I've discovered recently, because we have the world's first Scotch whisky, Roman Nose Inc. for trading nose whiskies, and here at the wine show we're introducing, I think, the most modern, efficient wine aroma nosing kit. On both kits, I have been trawled through all the whisky books and all the wine books and looked at all the descriptions, put them into a great table, and there's so much difference between descriptions, I've come to the conclusion that no wine writer or no whiskey writer has a calibrated nose.
I could believe that.
They've never had an aroma kit like ours where they will say, this is what I mean by woody, this is what I mean by musky, this is what I mean by ethereal, smoky, phenolic, medicinal. I don't think they've ever calibrated our noses.
Can you calibrate your nose?
Sure. This is what our kit does. It gives you a set of standards which will be universally agreed. And also, it makes you aware of your own sensitivity. But those are the actual standards. So, for example, if you read a whiskey book, the word phenolic is often used, and that's greatly mystifying for some people. Our whiskey kit gives you a standard for phenolic, a standard for medicinal, a standard for smoky, a standard for, same with wine, with all the categories. It's actually very simple, but it so happens historically that wine writers haven't done that. It's fine for Gilly Goulden to be, you're talking about smelling like the beat of an angel's wings in the Himalayas, but I don't believe it's a calibrated nose.
So, talking about people's individual perceptions of smells and that, how big a range can those threshold sensitivities be? Can it be really quite big? Because I know when I've spoken to people about how their tongue works, and they've said, you know, people have different sensitivities in their tongue.
Yeah.
And then how much of that amplitude gets through the nerve to the brain is also another factor in terms of people's preference. So whether they pick it up and how much they pick up, and then how much amplitude gets to the brain.
Yeah.
Is that a similar thing with the nose?
Yeah, but it's much, much more complex. There's actually really a much more important point to make first, is that because in the context of wine or whiskey or food, the actual technical term you should use is the word flavor. You're getting the sensation of flavor. And the sensation of flavor is generated inside your brain, and it comes from the brain examining the smell, the taste, and the hotness and coolness. And they take place through three different nerves. But 95% of the information is coming through smell, and only 5% through taste. And this is very important for whiskey. For example, our kits are aroma nose training kits, because 95% of the information, not 100%, but 95% of the information is coming about flavor through your nose. And that's why it's a much more efficient way of actually training yourself to be a food expert or a wine expert or any kind of drinks expert. Because the smell is doing most of the work.
Well,
no, there's absolutely no doubt about this.
You say that, but most people, if I give them a wine with high tannins versus low tannins,
yes,
doesn't matter what the smell is, they won't like the tannin structure. And
absolutely.
They'll say they won't like the wine. And are you trying to tell me that tannin structure is based on the nose?
No, tannin structure is taste.
Yeah, it's definitely.
Yeah, that's the 5% that is. No, tannin, it gives you that bitterness.
I could accept maybe alcohol, because some people are more sensitive to alcohol and really feel alcohol and get the burning sensation. And I know that fruit can hide alcohol.
Yeah.
So I could imagine that fruit from the nose could hide alcohol.
Yeah.
Is that right, or...?
Yeah, it's true, but you know, of course, you smell through your mouth.
Well, it goes down the back and up to your olfactory.
Yeah, you have tube. This is what confuses people. You have tubes at the back of your mouth that go straight into the smell brain. And of course, when you take something into your mouth, it warms up very quickly because the inside of your mouth is very warm, and that releases the smell molecules.
And you get different smell molecules because the temperature is different.
Absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely. But because it's happening through your mouth, you can see why people get confused and call it taste. And then some molecules linger. For example, if you have a whiskey with a heavy vanilla after flavor.
Can we use wine analogy?
Yes, that's right.
Because we're a wine show, not a whiskey show.
Right. Well, it's all interesting liquor, flavored liquor, isn't it? Sure. But if you have a lingering woody vanilla after flavor, as a Merlot, for example, that can actually linger. The molecules actually just stick to the back of your throat, and you keep on smelling them for a long time. It's like pressing a button on your computer.
Yep.
You know, it just keeps on producing an on signal.
Why do some wines linger, and sometimes the fruit lingers? Like one of the things we do in our tastings, we measure the length of the wine.
Yeah.
Not the wood, but the fruit.
Yeah.
And we say that the quality of the wine is related to how long the fruit length is. What's driving that length in the fruit?
Yeah, it's actually really very simple. The answer is that when you have small smelly molecules, they fly into the air very easily because they're small. They're not really tethered down to a surface. An example of that would be a light kind of nail varnish kind of fruity smell, like apple, you know, pear drops kind of smell. Those molecules are quite small. They float away very easily. But if you have peachy apricot smells, which are very prominent in many wines, they're much bigger molecules, and they stick onto surfaces, and they fly away much less readily.
Yep.
So they will linger and linger and can actually positively interfere. You have to clear your mouth, rinse your mouth out to get rid of those molecules. So it's a question of the size of the molecules and the stickability of the molecules.
So why does more expensive wines have longer length than cheaper wines? And it's usually, you know, people normally say, you know, you reduce yield in your vineyard and you'll get longer length in the wine. That doesn't make sense from what you're saying about the molecule size.
Well, yes, it does, because it just so happens the process in the vineyard, the process of flavor development in a grape as it's matured and fermented, it just so happens it produces those molecules, the bigger molecules, which will give that lengthening effect.
Well, how is it related to yield, though? Because there is a relationship. You know, you make a lot of wine.
Yeah, the answer to that is I'm a smell expert, not a wine expert, so I can't give you the answer to that.
I'm just trying to understand the reason the length is because of the size of the molecule. You're 100% sure on that?
Absolutely. For example, I can synthetically create almost any wine flavor you would want. So I'd put in a mixture of small molecules, medium-sized molecules, so we can arrange that. And if you take our wine kit, for example, and dip smelling strips in, by taking combinations of smelling strips, you can reconstitute the whole aroma profile, flavor profile of a whole range of wines. So assuredly, that difference is very clearly there.
Okay, back to length, because this is quite interesting.
Yeah.
I've never understood this.
I suspect the length also is probably involved with taste as well, where tannins are probably coming in. I'm surmising that because I actually don't know the answer.
But it's definitely larger molecules will stay in the mouth longer.
Yeah,
and then they're just going up to the nose.
The bigger a molecule, the more surface area it has, and the more it can actually stick onto a surface.
Yep.
Small molecules just can't get that grip.
Yeah.
And they fly away very, very quickly.
Okay.
To give you an example, just in the perfume world, if you put a perfume on a strip, you speak of having the top notes, very light fruity notes that come off very quickly, and they're small molecules that fly away. What's left on your skin after a few hours are big musky molecules, woody molecules, which are the biggest molecules we can smell, and they stick and stick and stick to your skin. I don't know the answer. I don't know if anybody's ever looked in wine, but I suspect the general principle is actually applying.
Yeah, okay. Vanilla does stay around.
Vanilla, yes. Vanilla is a big culprit. Vanilla sticks.
Yeah, I had a Chateau Margaux years ago, and it just was there minutes later. And, you know, the fruit had gone, but the vanilla and the cedary notes. I presume cedar is another.
Again, cedar is woody.
Yeah.
And in fact, I do.
Maybe that's part of it.
Over the years, I've held various kinds of smell exhibitions. If you can imagine this room we're in, which is a typical room. Imagine this as a three-dimensional walk-in graph, okay?
Yep.
And suppose we have molecules. Suppose along one horizontal side, I have molecules from small to big, okay? Along the other horizontal dimension, we had the electrical charge on the molecule from no charge to a high charge, okay? And the vertical axis will go from spherical at the top to kind of snaky. If you get a sphere, squeeze it out into a chain at the bottom, okay?
Yeah.
If I take a very small molecule, which is highly electrically charged, and put it down into one bottom corner, all those molecules there will be intensely fishy. I happen to hate them. They're some of my pet hates, okay? It is also, incidentally, and this overlaps with wine, it's also the smell of menstrual blood. That's why ladies are described as fishy. They literally are. It's the same smelly molecule, which actually occurs in some celebrated wines. If we go to the opposite corner, okay, very big molecules, very little electrical charge, and spherical, all those molecules there will be woody and musky.
Okay.
So as we put molecules into our 3D graph, we get fruity regions and floral regions and musky regions. And the size of the molecule is the key thing, because it sticks. The big molecules stick like bilio.
Okay.
And they linger. And vanilla-type molecules, for example, the technical term in perfume is balsamic. If you look at it, we have balsamic, and they can linger and interfere. And if you have a heavy Merlot with a really heavy lingering flavor, if you were to suddenly use to switch to a light Chardonnay without rinsing your mouth out, frankly, you wouldn't get much. All the lighter flavors, the appley, light green, lovely, refreshing notes in a Chardonnay would be absolutely masked.
One of the things someone taught me to do, and it's sort of related to this, when you're smelling wine, if you want to get all the aromas in the wine, give the glass a bit of a swirl.
Yes.
Stop, put your hand over the top, let it settle.
Yeah.
Give it a few minutes to settle, or not minutes, but
yeah,
a bit of time to settle. Then take the glass to nose very gently. You have a very delicate sniff, and you'll get the very light aromas. And then after a few seconds, then take a deeper sniff and get the heavier aromas. Do molecules layer out in a glass like that? It seems to work for me.
Yeah, it kind of does. That really is a kind of primitive gas chromatography.
Yeah.
Because the little molecules fly off very quickly, the heavier ones. Yes, it in a crude way.
So is that like if someone's trying to get all the smells in a wine, that would work for
and
them?
And this is also the effect of temperature. For example, if the wine is cold, a lot of the molecules you'll smell will be the light ones which are coming off. In order to get the heavy ones, you'll need to grasp the glass in your hand and let it warm up, and a swirling releases the molecules. Those things, technical things, are really quite tricky. And I wouldn't be unduly worried about it. Get your nose trained and you'll make sense of it.
Okay, George, we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. And just a reminder, folks, go sniffing.